You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet. Whether you're listening on computer or AM radio, FM radio, shortwave radio, mobile phones, or however you're listening, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome. I'm glad you are here as well, and I hope you make a habit out of it. Now, you have noticed, if you went over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, that there is a notice. Everything is gone off of the web page except just one link. And there's a notice that says, for tonight, only click this link to see the show. And the reason for that is because the attacks that we went through over the weekend apparently were more severe than either I or Bluehost thought they were. And so some people are sending me emails saying they're getting notices, warnings when they go to my website that says, caution, you know, there may be some malware on this site. So what we're going to do, you've just got one link. It takes you away from the site to a place where you can see and hear the show. And what we're going to do is roll it all back, and the whole thing will be a clean install by tomorrow, okay? And so, you know, we truck on. Like I said, though, last night, you know, I've been at this for 9 years. For 9 years we've been under attack, and all I can say about that is that I'm still here. They haven't succeeded, and they're not going to succeed. It's an irritation. It's a frustration, but all I can do is just keep winning, and that's what we do. And you know, we're out here tonight. We're doing the show, and all around this planet, in 95 countries, even with the best efforts of the idiots against us, we are broadcasting, and people are listening and watching the show. So that's the way it will be. Now, you will hear during the commercial breaks, you will hear that you need to go over and sign up for the K-Files e-zine and or sign up for our members area. You can't do that. Not tonight. And I apologize for that, but that's just the way it is. The only way I can safeguard you and your computer is to make sure that you navigate away from my site until this show is over. At some point tonight, it will all be done, and we'll be back up and running. Everything will be fine, and it's no big deal. Just a frustration, but no big deal, really. And but I apologize. I know some of you would like to sign up for the K-Files e-zine tonight. You can't do it. You have to wait till tomorrow. Some of you would like to become members tonight. You can't do it. You have to wait till tomorrow. But we'll get it fixed, and we'll be back up and running. In just a few minutes, and I mean a few, my guest is going to be William Warwick IV. And he has become one of the major hitters in the UFO arena. You've seen him and his work featured on ABC News, Nightline, UFO Hunters, The Kevin Smith Show, Coast to Coast, Jerry Pippin, and a whole bunch of newspapers all around the world. Well, I'll tell you what, he's back here again tonight, and we're in for a great time. So you be sure and still be here when we get back from this break, all right? And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is William Warrick IV. He has, I think, a very interesting background and a very interesting story. He had a major UFO sighting in 1997. Actually, it was one day before or one night before the Phoenix Lights. And we'll he's talked with us about that before, but we'll get him to bring that up and tell us a little bit about that, because some of you have not heard it, and it's pretty amazing. He was fired from his job for using a company radio to ask other technicians in the field if they had seen the same strange object in the sky that he had seen. And since then, he has investigated hundreds of UFO sightings. He is the author of four books, and as I said earlier, his work has been featured on ABC News Nightline, UFO Hunters, The Kevin Smith Show, George Norrie's Coast to Coast, Jerry Pippin, and lots of local and international newspapers. William, welcome back to the show.
How you doing, Kevin? Good to be back.
William, let's go back to 1997, and we'll come forward from there, but let's go back and share with us what you saw. It was a major sighting, and turned out to be rather a pivotal event in your life, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. There were a number of discoveries, or rediscoveries, really, I guess you would say, of certain relationships to where the event occurred and things like the so-called infamous Philadelphia Experiment, and other certain anomalous things that were in that particular area. And the object itself really... Excuse me, I'm a little choked up from the allergies. The object itself that I witnessed was a boomerang-shaped object about anywhere from 400 to 600 feet wide from tip to tip, and was about 25 feet tall and about 35 feet from front to back. And it had the, you know, flying characteristics of a brick or a book, actually, probably a better description. It had no laminar flow. It had a very low, almost imperceptible hum. It was more like a subsonic deep rumble that I could feel or remember experiencing. And the object dropped from altitude that was so high that this object, even being 600 feet wide or 400 feet wide, take your pick, dropped from an altitude where it was about the size of my finger to treetop level in maybe 3 to 5 seconds, and then floated about 100 feet past in front of my distance, right in front of me, like it was a parade, and then drifted silently over very slowly, just kind of at the same speed over the naval base, which was I was basically surrounded by over in Norfolk, Virginia. So it was a pretty awe-inspiring experience.
Now, are you a pilot?
I was in a civil air patrol when I was younger. I really wanted to become a Navy pilot. I was accepted to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University a couple years in a row, but I didn't have the money to go. Pilot school down there is quite expensive. I was working in Boston at the time when I was in CAP at the Taunton Civil Air Patrol Squadron. So I was trained as a search and my exact position was to be a spotter. So I had 20/10 vision, and my job was to actually be able to identify aircraft, military and civilian, help coordinate activities with the ELT transmitters and stuff like that. So my background was that I was like a pilot. I was an airport kid. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I was hang around airports and wanted to be a pilot. I was on my way to becoming a pilot. Even really up until this experience, I still was going to mechanical engineering at Old Dominion University at the time and working as a plumber. So even throughout that whole experience, that was kind of still my goal up until this thing happened, and then everything just kind of everything changed direction.
All right. So, but the point is that you were trained to identify aircraft on site.
Absolutely. I memorized in 1986 James Encyclopedia of Civilian and Known Military Aircraft just by sight, and that was when I was like 14.
All right. Now, whenever
this an understatement.
I'm sorry?
That would be an understatement.
Okay. Now, when this thing dropped out of the sky, how rapidly did it drop? You said it dropped almost to just above treetop level, but how rapidly?
It actually, that was one of the very strange things about it that I've found out since then, that this has actually been reported by other people who have seen this particular type of craft. It dropped out of the sky. It spun on a central axis. You know how in a normal airplane you would dive in order to drop, typically. Well, I mean, you could change your ailerons and stuff like that and sort of change your trim to go down at a more level plane. But basically this thing on a central axis went from moving in a forward direction probably 200-300 miles an hour, something like that, and just fell. Like, literally, just dropped out of the sky. Like, and the only way I could describe it is like a maple seed pod that you see. We used to call them helicopters when we were kids. And
yeah.
Just, you throw them up in the air, and they fall down, and they spin around on a central axis. And that's essentially what it did. And it was so fast. It moved so quickly. And it was so dark. And it had no lights on it at all. And it was dark against, you know, the night sky. And it moved so quickly, I actually lost track of it. And I really had trouble kind of putting together back what had happened in my mind to figure out what exactly it had done, you know what I mean?
And now, an aircraft that spins on its central axis, okay, no aircraft can stay airborne doing that. Whenever an aircraft, and they do, jets, especially when they're being tested, sometimes get into that. If the pilot cannot get it out of that, he has to eject. He's got to eject. Yeah.
Uncontrollable flat spin. That's a little bit different. This was really nothing like that. It dropped so fast that I calculated that it had to have broken the speed of sound, which is, you know, 450 knots, something like that, you know, to get to that level from that altitude down to that level. And there was no sonic boom. There was no sound whatsoever until it was about a treetop level. And right at when it was at treetop level, and as it came closer to me, I could literally feel, you don't really hear it. It's like a subsonic hum. You know, goes back and forth like that. And this is reported by other witnesses, too, so that's one of the things I've been able to document is there are, you know, although this encounter was, for me, in terms of the boomerang sightings, one of the more unique ones, you know, out of the, God, there's got to be thousands of them now, documented, you know, with lots of detail, dates, times, areas, descriptions, you know, meteorological reports, et cetera, et cetera. Mine was very close and very detailed, you know, almost like a CE-1 or CE-2, the one before contact.
Yeah, CE-2, I think, is before contact. CE-3 is contact.
And if I did have contact, I wouldn't talk about it because they'd probably lock me up.
So. well, yeah, they just might. All right, now, it's pretty interesting, this hum that you're describing. Now, on the show last night, I had Dick Criswell. And he was talking about, he's been in the hospital now for, I don't know, 7-8 months, and just came home from the hospital. But while he was in the hospital, he was contacted by a firefighter who had seen, he was a witness to the UFO incident in Kokomo back in April 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And in that incident, witnesses on the ground saw oval-shaped UFOs and a triangular-shaped UFO, and they got into a dogfight. An oval-shaped UFO shot a blue beam at the triangular one, and the triangular one went to the ground. Well, the fire department started getting calls, 911 calls, about a crash. And this is a firefighter who was sent to respond to that. And when they got out there, what he saw on the ground was not damaged in any way that he could see. It was about 300 feet from wingtip to wingtip, only there were no wings. It was a triangle, but about 300 feet across. And he said that it was dark gray, very shiny like glass, metal though. It was metal. And the way he knows that is he walked up to it and he touched it. And he said that it was cold to the touch and it was making a humming noise. Mm-hmm. So it was the only thing that he noticed was this hum, and he said it was he could not possibly reproduce the hum. He said it was different than anything he'd heard, but it was a hum, and it sounded like, you know, electronic humming.
Yeah.
And he said that I asked Dick Criswell about this in a previous show when he was still in the hospital. I asked if he felt any sort of electric stuff in the air, you know, like where it makes your hair stand up, you know, on your arms and stuff. And he said no, that there was no sensation like that. What about you? Did you sense anything like that?
There was actually, at the height of when it was closest to me, which would have been its right wing, quote unquote, its right wing, its right side would have been perpendicular to me.
Mm-hmm.
I actually lost my voice. And when I say that, I was standing on my buddy's porch. I just went out to get a business card for my truck. And I went back in to give him a business card for the plumbing company that I was, you know, for the work that I was doing. And I tried to shout out his name as the thing dropped, it was coming up from behind the trees. And I didn't really, at that point, because I actually thought it was a hand glider before that. And then when it kind of came out from behind the trees, I was like, because I thought it was a hand glider on a flat spin. I went through all the things that you kind of brought up, you know what I'm saying? Like, normal pilot would bring up all these, rule out all these things. And I tried to shout out his name. I shouted out, nothing came out. So I took a little bit of a breath, quick breath, and just shout his name out again, a little harder. And I did this 3 or 4 times. And by the time that I got to the 4th time, I had taken a really deep breath to shout his name out as hard as I could, and not a sound came out. Now, I could feel that my voice box vibrate, and I know what this feeling is. And anyone who's ever had a concussion or been hit in the head and has lost their hearing temporarily and can feel the vibrations and stuff going around that they can't hear,
mm-hmm,
will know what I'm talking about. So whatever, when it was closest to me, it had to have been some type of field effect of the propulsion system, and the hum is related to the field effect of the propulsion system without any question whatsoever. And I think that either the result and effect of that subsonic hum is actually some sort of, you know, time-space distortion, gravity wave, whatever you want to call it, that is sort of muffling the sound, just as it would in space, because there's no sound in space, because there's no way to transmit anything, but somehow, you know, either that or active noise cancellation, I don't know. But
well, now let me tell you, I saw several years ago on a morning news show a piece where this guy had, in New York, had invented noise cancellation, a noise cancellation device. And what they did is they put it on an automobile that had no muffler. And of course, you know how those sound. They're really loud.
Sure.
And then he flipped a switch, and the car's still running, and it was really, really loud. He flips the switch, bang, no noise.
Yeah, it was, I mean, not that the whole experience that was going on wasn't, like, freaky enough, but when that happened, it was really like, I don't know, I couldn't move. I was in shock from that point on. I was too, really, honestly, afraid to move a muscle.
Now, were you close enough to see this?
My head and my eyes.
Were you close enough to see this thing and be able to determine whether it had a shiny, glossy finish or a sort of a flat, matte finish?
It had a, I would best describe it, and I have a little bit of an engineering background. Of course, you know, I'm a class A contractor here in Virginia. The surface is what I would best describe as a ceramic, metallic ceramic flame coat spread, which was a dark, pretty much like what that guy described, although mine wasn't triangular. It was a straight-up boomerang.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you know, a huge flying rectangle with just slightly rounded corners, that was bent in the middle about 5 or 10 degrees to make it into a bull ring shape, and then, you know, make it 600 feet, 400 feet wide, something in that range.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that and the thing that was really odd about it, too, was that there was no seams. The part of the craft that I saw, which was the leading front right edge, vertical front edge, because it was vertical. There was no laminar flow. This thing wasn't curved. It was just like a vertical wall and then a slightly rounded corner on the top. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the top round part of the corner. And let me close my eyes for a second. The top right. So I saw the top front, top right. Didn't see very much of the bottom. The bottom's kind of in the shadow because it was sort of tilted towards me. The right wing, so to speak, was tilted a little bit towards me, and it actually made a yaw movement and then corrected for the yaw and then just kept on going straight. So I didn't get to see very much of the bottom at that particular point in the sighting. But what I did see were the front and the top and the transition between the front and the top. I could not see a seam because the light from the high-pressure sodium street lights from below is shining off. This thing wasn't more than... I calculated 100 feet, 125 feet above, you know, the ground,
mm-hmm.
which is just, you know, 10 feet above, roughly 10, 15 feet above the highest tree, you know?
Yeah. Now, how far down range was it?
Oh, it was 125 feet. I calculated that when I went back and shot it with a laser that I have.
So 125 feet down range and about 150 feet above the ground. That's close.
100 feet above the ground and 125 feet triangular from my distance, so that would be the hypotenuse, the seaside. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's close.
It was a lot closer than I thought it was. What had happened is there was actually a tree that was blocking that particular streetlight that was reflecting off of it the most.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it wasn't a tree. It was a huge bush is what it was. And what had happened is a new rotor bought that place over the years. I went back 5 or 6 years later, took another picture, and all of it, and I compared it to the previous pictures, and I realized here's this big street light, and I'm like, where did that thing come from? And then I realized, oh, the guy cut the bushes down. So I thought this thing was like, you know, 200 or 300 feet further away from me this whole time because of my perception of what street light I was looking at. I mean, a major follow-up, you know, with that,
mm-hmm.
whatever. But after the guy cut the thing down, I realized, oh my God, the streetlight had to have been right there for it to have been that bright and that close and blah, 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 blah. And then I recalculated everything, and that's why I think originally I reported it was about 600 to 800 feet, and I brought that down to 300 or 400 to 600 feet because it was closer, so hence it was smaller than I thought, it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
All right, where did this happen? What's the location of this?
This happened right in the middle of a very small residential section surrounded by the Norfolk Naval Air Station, the Norfolk Naval Submarine Base, the Norfolk Tank Plant. I mean, they've got so many acronyms over there, it'd make your head spin. NATO Forces Headquarters was actually less than probably a quarter of a mile south, due south of that. So this particular aircraft passed over probably one of the most sensitive particular military installations probably on the whole East Coast, if not the world.
Did you see, after this thing passed over, did you see any military airplanes patrolling the area as if they were looking for it?
No. You know, and that's the funny thing about it, because I'll tell you what, it's very rare that you're over there that you don't hear or see the craft coming in and going, because they do touch and goes. Right now, I think we've got three carriers here right now that are about to go out.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll pick up right here when we come back. Don't go away, folks. We've got more with William Warrick IV right after this. Welcome back. My guest is William Warrick IV. Let me just ask you, do you go by Bill or William?
Oh, please, Bill's fine.
Okay, Bill, we were talking about the fact that this happened right, it had to have flown over several very sensitive military installations. And you said normally you hear the Jets all the time. They're doing touch and goes and all kinds of other things, and you hear them all the time. But that night you heard no Jets?
Nothing. Nothing. And believe me, I was listening.
What do you think the deal is with that?
I think they had a stand down. I think they had a stand down for sure. I mean, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I do know that there was the very next evening, 80 miles off the coast of Norfolk, troubleshooter 615 went down, and it's still the incident's still not been explained. No mechanical failure, no drugs. You know, the weather was
okay. Tell me again, what went down?
Troubleshooter 615 was a special operations helicopter that dropped off a couple Navy SEALs at Tamnik Station down here in Virginia Beach, and was headed back to a frigate, I believe it was called the Taylor, about 80 miles off the coast of Norfolk, and crashed on approach, apparently. That's the story.
So, and that was the next night?
That was actually at the height of the Phoenix Lights, correct. That was March 13th, so that was the height of the Phoenix Lights. So, again, there's another connection between not only my sighting, but a crash of a military aircraft, which might have been involved somehow in, the UFO event. And then, of course, after the crash of which occurred of troubleshooter 615 at the height of the Phoenix Lights on March 13th, which is at 11:19 p.m., at 11:30 p.m., just a few minutes later, 10 minutes later, that's when Clinton allegedly injured his knee in Florida and had to be taken to Bethesda, Maryland Hospital, which is where, interestingly enough, the Secretary Forrestal was taken from Hobie Sound directly to Bethesda, Maryland Hospital, and, we know what happened to him. He was thrown out of a window. So some very strange, things have gone on with this whole event that are just still relatively unexplainable. And, of course, we've got Governor Simonton coming forward and doing a complete 180-degree reversal from, being the guy that poo-pooed it and basically put the nail on the coffin of the whole case back in 1997, turning around, 10 years later and saying, oh, yeah, I saw it myself. I mean, it's just... You couldn't write a Hollywood script that was as good as this. You really couldn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll tell you something. The explanation. A lot of people have changed their opinion about Simonton because he's now come out with this story that he actually saw it. But the explanation he gives for why he did what he did is people were getting hysterical, and that's absolutely nonsense. Any politician that thinks that because people are asking questions, that's hysteria, doesn't need to be in politics, and he isn't. So,
I would agree with you on that point to a certain degree, but we should also take into consideration the fact that at the point that whole thing went down on, that he was approached with that, and he said that he would get to the bottom of it, that he was under indictment, and he did.
Well, now see, I think that is more of the story.
That is totally the untold story that hasn't been touched on in any way, shape, or form. And, not that I blame him. He got a presidential pardon from Bill Clinton,
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly, not that the story can't get any weirder, but apparently back in the 60s, when Bill Clinton was at a beach party in Massachusetts, my hometown, Governor Simonton, who was also there at this beach party, I guess Bill had a few too many, whatever, and got caught in Cape Cod undertow or whatever, and it started, was almost in a drowning position, apparently. And supposedly, Governor Simonton saved his life, and so you would imagine that if something major was going down in defense, the satellite was the Misty 13 satellite was taken out that same night, and then of course you have troubleshooter 615 going down. And then you have all these things going down in Phoenix. You would imagine that if Governor Simonton, what Governor Simonton says is true, and he did see it. I mean, you bet your bottom dollar he'd be on his phone to his, best buddy, whatever, telling them what's going on. Well, vice versa.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and so yeah, now that story makes sense.
Of course.
And you know, I buy that story, but the deal about people becoming hysterical and he was trying to calm people down—nonsense, absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about Phoenix Lights and your sighting comparatively. You've seen, I'm sure, the videos of the Phoenix Lights. What they saw here in Phoenix, and I was not here at that time. I think I was already out of the country. I think I was in Bosnia. I can check the passport, old passport, and find out. But I was certainly not in Phoenix at the time. You've seen the videos of it. What do you think? What they saw here in Phoenix, is it the same thing you saw?
The witnesses, okay, here's the deal. The only videos that were known or exist have been confiscated by some nefarious organization.
Somebody that loves freedom of speech.
Right. Well, the one, you know, like we documented in our documentary, that one, you know, last year's Independent Film Festival Award, the one witness that Frances Bauer attested to, and this was backed up by two of her deputies. What do you call them down there? You have a different name for them. Went to go collect some evidence for a man named Richard Curtis, who had all this electronic gear and all this other stuff. He was a disabled Vietnam veteran, and apparently this guy had his safe broken into. And all the evidence that he had confiscated on the same day that, he had, or at the time that this particular gentleman, this witness, had called Frances Bowood to get this information to her, and she sent these deputies over. We got this all documented in the video, which you could buy on our website at UFOEyewitness.com. And, so there were videos that were out there, but, they're all gone. The good ones are gone. And it's my understanding there are two or three that were really good. Richards is one of them. There's one particular one. I forget the name of the general. It's very, very bad, very distant. But that's probably the only, as closest to the real boomerangs as you're going to get. And those events occurred largely around the 8:30-ish time frame. And then you had the response to those events, which was the government's response to drop these flares in a boomerang sort of ascending, banking to the right, nice, gentle, sloping flight path, which could be programmed into their flight computers very easily. And that these flares were dropped as a diversion. And there's absolutely no question in my mind that part of what many of the witnesses saw was flares being dropped as a diversion in probably many different places.
Yeah, as you're saying, there were two sightings that night. There was the first, and we'll call it the real, and then there was the flare drop later. But the interesting thing, the first one, the real one, that thing had flown across Nevada and all the way down the state. So it was not just Phoenix, and a lot of people don't know this. And people that buy the flare drop don't know the story.
No, and not just that. That's very correct. And not just that, but these boomerang sightings actually began a couple days before, just like my, experience occurred a couple days before. Now, March 13th had its own numerological significance and occult significance. And, I mean, there is even some evidence that I found years before that had predicted that something big was going to happen on the 13th.
Why the 13th? What's the significance?
It goes back to the Knights Templar, for one, and the October 13th, Friday the 13th thing, when the Knights Templars were disbanded by the Papal Bull and all that, October 13th, 1307. It also goes back to the largest mass UFO sighting probably that we know of in current history, which would be Fatima, Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
In 1917, which occurred, which the children were told by the by the ETs, okay, that to return to this particular spot, and I've been to Portugal by chance, by the way, which was amazing, and I ended up in Fatima in 2006, and That for May 13th to for June 13th, July, August, September, October 13th, you know, that these girls were to meet these ETs in Portugal in 1917. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this was covered up by the Catholic Church to make it into, you know, the Virgin Mary and Jesus Christ and the baby and then, you know, the saints and all that stuff. And it wasn't. It was a true ufological event that occurred, complete with orbs and flying saucers and the whole bit. And so the culmination of all of these events was on October 13th when the ETs had told the young girls, the children, that they would make themselves appear and prove to the, you know, masses that they existed. And that was called the miracle of the sun. So there was this same strain of belief or information out there, which is called the Way, which I came across actually in 1995, I think it was. And I actually had my first UFO encounter that very same night. It was my birthday, actually, October 10th, 1995. But that was like a shooting meteor that made like a sweeping 90-degree turn. But that was before I knew anything about the background of this particular area. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't really into UFOs. I was like, oh, that's cool. It must be a UFO. And then, like, back to whatever I was doing. Of course, which is totally separate from what happened in 1997, which was a close encounter of, you know, very, very, very unique proportions.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost myself.
Well, you were talking about Fatima.
That's right. I apologize. So the significant that so it was predicted in this information that I came across in this thing called The Way, which is supposedly this you know, installments, chapters of information written actually by Ingo Swann, who was a former remote viewer for the National Security Agency and the Army, for the you know, the remote viewing psychic project that they had going on to, you know, to combat the Russians. Psychotronics experiments. He didn't want to be identified. I think that more than one person knows about it, so there's no sense of putting it out of the bag, and I guarantee you probably only 100 people in the world have read his manuscript. But
I'm one of them.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So that's where it came from. And he actually wrote another book about the Virgin Mary revelations, but basically he documented all of these similarities between all of these, you know, supposed UFO/Virgin Mary events and what they really mean to us. And so the
significance then with Fatima is that all of this was happening on the 13th of each month.
Right. Why the fascination with the 13th? What are they trying to tell us? Well, there is something that is also very significant about the number 13, which we're coming up on, which many of your listeners will probably know, and I'm sure you're going to know as soon as I mention this, that the very famed 2012 end date of the Mayan calendar, the supposed end date, which is just the end of the one, you know, back to its cycles, ends if you actually write out the numerological number, not the symbols, but if you write out the number of what that date is on December 21st or 22nd, take your pick, 2012, right?
Mm-hmm.
That date is actually 13.0.0.0.0.
Wow. All right, listen, we've got a break coming up here in about 10 seconds, and we'll get back into that whenever we come back from this break. Don't go away, folks. It's always interesting here, and especially when William Warrick is here. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Let me just remind you, for those of you that tuned in late, you can't subscribe to the K-Files e-zine tonight. You can't join the members area. You cannot buy my DVD seminar, my seminar on DVD. You can't do anything on my site tonight. For your protection, we took down access to everything on the site except one link where you could get this show. And after the show, we will roll it back to a previous date and then re-update it to get rid of nasty little things that nasty little minds decided to install on my site. And as they sit and chuckle, all I can say is, as I said last night, bring it on, boys. Welcome to the major leagues. You keep it up, you will be caught. And by the way, I love prosecuting people. I spent my life prosecuting criminals. And I'll do you too. All right. Welcome back, William, or Bill. Now, we were talking about this, the date of December 21st, 2012 translates somehow numerologically into 13 point something.
13.0.0.0 when you when you line up the back all the different cycles of the three or four different cycles that are in the Mayan calendar, when they all line up, they equal 13.0.0.0.
Okay, so the 13th is an important, or the number 13 is an important number occultically. On the 13th is when we had the Phoenix Lights sighting. You had operations.
Let's put it this way: they turned their lights on on the 13th, because when I saw mine, there was no lights on it whatsoever. Never at any point in the whole sighting was there any indication that there was any kind of light source on that craft, or a point where there could be a light source on the craft. Now, there could have been some stuff on the the bottom, but as far as the front vertical, the top, and the back vertical, there was nothing that indicated to me that there could be any source of light, a light fixture or anything that could emit light. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let me ask you, let's go back to what you saw, and a question just occurred to me.
Sure.
You described how this thing was sort of tilted your direction for a moment, where you could see the front and the right and the top.
Yep.
Did you see anything on this object that appeared to be a cockpit area?
No. Negative. This was either computer controlled or remotely controlled. There was absolutely no... Well, actually, there were three dome-shaped objects on the bottom that were protruding just ever so slightly from the bottom, which, I suppose you could say they could have been camera wells, but I can almost guarantee you that they were part of the propulsion system, because you need at least three points of access to control something if it was, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Just like a chair needs three points to hold it up. So, the front, the triangle configuration, the boomerang and the triangle configurations are doing the same thing, with the exception that perhaps a triangle configuration might have a negative, sort of gravity nullification in the middle, and then three points on the exterior kind of point that in the right direction, sort of like a helicopter. Whereas the boomerang would be a sort of a same type of propulsion technique. You got three points of axis, but it's like a battleship. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you go on helicopter to battleship, and God knows what else they have. I mean, I've spoken to some Hopi and some other Native Americans who've told me personally, they've witnessed things that are just, skyscraper size,
All right. Now, is it your impression that the thing that you saw is extraterrestrial? And if that's your impression, why?
That's a very tough question, and I have kind of a 50-50 split answer on that.
Okay.
If I were to lean towards one or the other, I would say extraterrestrial, but I cannot and will not rule out man-made.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be 51% ET and 49% man-made. That's where I would be at this point, unless I had incontrovertible evidence that it was one or the other. And I don't have that.
Well, the reason I ask that is the comment you made earlier, that you thought that the base had a stand down order.
Yeah, twice that year, for the basically first time in the whole history of the Air Force, they had a complete stand down of all non combat operations of aircraft. And there was a slurry. I mean, there was just dozens and dozens, in little pockets over that whole, from that whole year on, September 14th, they shut everything down, and they did it a little bit before that in 96. So there was definitely something going on. And actually in July of 1997, I noted that for the first time since Pearl Harbor, we had all five carriers here in port in Norfolk, which they're not supposed to do.
All right, so if assuming they had a stand-down order, it would indicate either that they had picked up this thing on radar or some detection equipment and noted its massive size and decided they needed to leave it alone. That doesn't seem likely because they do scramble. And, in fact, on the Phoenix Lights, although they denied it, there are witnesses that saw them scramble jets to go after the Phoenix Lights object.
Sure.
So either that's the case or it's theirs.
Just recently in October of 2007 here in Suffolk, of the military jets intercepting the boomerang that's hovering in the sky. That UFO hunters conveniently, you know, cut out of the you know, the major portion of the documentary. So, you know, there is definitely a policy of certainly harass and escort if possible, is unquestionably. But I also think that back then, I think that when they had, I think it was five or six jets go down, you know, different areas. They had one C-130 crash into a C-130 intelligence gathering, you know, multi, you know, probably, who knows, $300 million aircraft. Who knows how much that thing cost? It crashed into another German electronics monitoring aircraft in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, in the middle of the daytime, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
You know
what
I'm saying? Yeah. It just doesn't happen, man. They were both trying to monitor, you know, something that was going on, some type of UFO, and then they crashed into each other. It's probably what happened. Or they were destroyed by the UFO, you know?
Well, in the case of what you saw, it either has to be that they had detected it and decided not to try and intercept it, or they detected it, and maybe the thing turned off the ability of these jets to even fire up, just as it turned off your voice.
Oh, absolutely, and that was reported as far back as 1976 in the Shemiran Iranian case with the F-4 Phantom that tried to intercept the UFO over Tehran, and that every time it tried to lock on, it basically shut the equipment off, radar lock on, whatever. It just shut it down until the craft disengaged. You know, the attack, and then his equipment, you know, his navigation, all the other equipment came back on. So they definitely have the ability to do that, and that's been reported going back almost as long as that equipment's been around. So the technology that's being displayed is just if it's not extraterrestrial, it's got to be like the Atlanteans that, you know, went underground or under the ocean and have been developing this technology for thousands of years, because it's mind-boggling.
Well, the third possibility is there was a stand down because it's ours. They knew it was ours, and they knew it was going to be test flown.
That's yeah. And the only really thing that you could come up with that is that it would have to be a massive psychological operation against the United States people to see what their reaction would be to a supposed extraterrestrial event. Because there would be no reason to fly that craft in so many different areas at such a low altitude. I mean, if that thing had crashed, it would have taken out city blocks. It would have taken out, you know, I mean, if it had crashed, I mean, it's so close to a carrier. God knows what it could have taken out. You know what I mean? If
mm-hmm.
it's a fuel depot or whatever. So the idea that it was an American operation, it would be a very risky psychological operation for sure. And the technology that I saw displayed was no prototype. I mean, that thing was like, it displayed a mastery of its environment like nothing I've ever seen or probably ever will see in terms of aeronautics. You know, it was unbelievable.
All right, we have a break coming up. It's the top of the hour break. On the other side of this break, we will open up the telephone lines for you. Unfortunately, this evening, the flash message feature isn't available because of the website thing. But the telephone lines will be open, and that means that you can give us a call with your question or comment for Bill Warrick IV. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Bill Warrick, and we're talking about some pretty hairy stuff, indeed. And, you know, some of the folks who are listening right now have seen very similar things to what Bill is describing. Folks certainly in Phoenix have seen something similar. It doesn't sound as if it's identical, but similar. And then maybe that fits the description of what some of the folks in Stephenville, Texas saw. But these gigantic craft have been seen in a lot of places around the country. Now, Bill, one of the things that I've noticed is that, you know, we're hearing about the triangular craft, we're hearing about the boomerang craft, but we're also beginning to hear some reports about just plain rectangular craft that, you know, that's just weird.
Well, like I said, one of my close, I haven't spoken to her in a while, but one of my closer Native American friends from the Hopi tribe, or Hopi tradition, I should say, confided in me a couple years ago that she was doing a ceremony with, you know, very sacred ceremony, somewhere, and described how she saw these UFOs that appeared along with other craft of a different particular shape, which I'm not going to mention because, but one of the craft was described as a huge, like a skyscraper, rectangular-shaped craft in the sky, like as big as a skyscraper. So,
I've had guests on this show describe that, and I've had guests on this show describe, at least one guest, describe seeing pyramid-shaped UFOs and of a massive size. And, of course, when she described that, all the thoughts about the movie, you know, was it Stargate?
Yeah, back in 98, yeah.
Yeah, that movie, you know, the UFO was a pyramid shape. So, about all that.
From what I saw, from what I've seen of the technology that was displayed, whether it's man-made or not, there was complete mastery of gravity. I mean, gravity was nothing. Gravity was completely nullified. I mean, for three or four different, you know, physics, you know, violations of physics, the sound barrier, the speed of its drop broke the sound barrier, there's no sound, which could be, you know, ruled off as noise cancellation. However, to have dropped that fast, then to have basically stopped at treetop level, the forces, the G-forces involved with that would have been, you know, unbelievable. You know, 30, 40, 50, 60 Gs, you know, something like that. So,
You know, they obviously have technology that either we don't have, or if we have it, you and I don't know about it. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 602-539-9580 or toll-free 888-223-4599. And let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan up in Puget Sound again.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi, William. Boy, great work. I think you've done such a great job of tying all these things together. It's got to be one of the I recommend everybody to get your book. Well, one of the things that's so interesting about that year, 1997, was there's so many things going on at the time of the Phoenix Lights. All the things that you mentioned, plus one thing that I've always been curious about was that that was during the time that the Hale-Bopp comet was being seen over our skies, and I don't know if there's any evidence of anything, but to me that's always been kind of a curious connection to all this, which I don't know if there is any connection to it. But the question I had was, with all these things that you've tied together on that day, have you been able to find anything about John McCain, his interest in this deal? Since, was he a senator at that time in Arizona?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was. Yeah, yeah. From what I understand, Francis Boward, I don't know if this has been published or if this is something that she told me personally, but she wrote a letter to him. I believe she wrote a letter to him, you know, stating, you know, as a concerned citizen, as a you know, the citizen, she's elected to represent the citizens of Phoenix as a councilwoman. And she wrote a letter to the senator. You know, the governor obviously wasn't doing anything about it. I'm not sure if that was before or after. I believe it was after the thing with the governor. Could be wrong. He basically just gave back the standard blue book sort of, you know, one-page, five-paragraph response that, you know, that you would expect from the government. So he basically washed his hands of it. And I believe two or three other times he was called on the question on TV and in a press question, and again he washed his hands of it. So, and I actually wrote an article about that in American Chronicle that you can read in much more detail. I can't remember all the details off the top of my head. But basically, you know, he had a chance, if he really wanted to win this election, to be the maverick that you know, that he thinks, so that he said the Republican people says that he is. And that would have been it. It could have been it. And unfortunately, but he could still do that. You know, he's still a senator.
I had heard rumors, and I don't have any way of verifying this, but that I heard that he's been known to kind of take an interest in space and to actually collect a lot of Mars photographs. And I don't have any evidence of that, but.
Well,
I'm apolitical here. I'm not picking sides. I'm just saying that.
No. Hey, look,
hey,
I have
there were so many
against,
interesting things going on. So.
Yeah, I have nothing against John McCain at all. I mean, I think he's a great statesman, and he served his country well, and I think he can continue to serve his country well. And you know, before he passes away, or you know, he has to retire or whatever, he can still make a difference. He is the senator of the state where you've got. You know, the most massive amount of UFO sightings and greatest events occurring in military bases, et cetera. It's all tied to the military. It's all tied to the financing and everything that's behind it. So, you know, he could make that stand if he wants to, certainly. I hope that he does.
All right, let's go back to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Hello, Kevin. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hi, Mike.
How are you tonight?
Good.
Hello, William. How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
Pretty good. I was visiting my brother down in Georgia over the weekend, Kevin, and he and I revisited a sighting he had a few years ago. He had come out of his house and was fixing to get in his van, and he happened to look up in the pine trees, and he saw a boomerang-shaped object in broad daylight. And he said he watched it for about a minute or so, then walked around to the back of his van, was going to get his video camera out and take a video of it. But for some reason, he stopped. And then all of a sudden, the thing sort of just did a sideways slip and then just took off.
How big was it?
Pardon me?
How big was it?
I'm not really sure, but it was large. It was large enough that at arm's length, it was about the size of his hand. And so that would put it probably pretty close to the range that y'all are talking about there.
Yeah. You know, one of the other interesting, besides the sort of maple leaf
twisting on its axis, central axis, falling motion that it makes. One of the other peculiar things the boomerangs seem to be able to do is they can, as in the video that you can see on UFOeyewitness.com, they can, I call it the alpha configuration, where the boomerang is standing straight up, but like floating in a forward position. You know what I mean? I call it like the alpha configuration. And also, too, in all other types of different shapes, they've also been reported flying, you know, in a forward motion, but with the V pointing, like a boomerang pointing straight down. And so it seems to be sort of within its own sort of anti-gravity bubble where the axis is just really not that important to some degree, you know. Certainly the video that we have of the U.S. Marine Terrell Copeland from Suffolk shows the military aircraft, or whatever it was, a jet, two jets actually, you can only see one in the video, circling and trying to intercept a hovering boomerang-shaped aircraft that's just hovering in the air in the A configuration. So, and how long ago was this, sir?
This probably happened about 8 years ago.
We can barely hear you, Mike.
Yeah, he said about 8 years
about
ago.
Yeah, about 8 years ago, I think, is when this occurred.
Yeah. That's right around
you
the same time.
You told me about it years earlier, so I just happened to bring it up, and then we recounted it again.
Well, yeah, you know, the other interesting thing about the boomerang is that it goes back throughout history. You know, you can find boomerang configuration sort of anomalous things in paintings and all over the place, if you know where to look for them.
Mike, thanks for the call, man. Very interesting. All right, let's go to the telephone and caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello there. Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin. Hello, Bill.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, we were talking about the Phoenix Lights. I tell you, and if this was a test by the powers that be, which I do think that this triangle that everybody's been seeing, everybody saw it around that time, including yourself and a bunch of others. I think it was one of our own, considering the numbers behind it. I know I turned 13 on that very same day also. Judging about the reaction about people, I remember watching the news, and then I remember Robert Stack and Unsolved Mysteries jumped right on this case right after. I think I don't think there was much of a panic like these people have been telling us for all this time. I think people wanted answers, and they weren't satisfied with the ones that they were getting.
Well, there was a definite cover up too. I mean, there was no question that there was a cover up. I mean, you had the loss of Craig Button, who was the A-10 pilot, a couple of weeks before the government announced, you know, the military announced that, oh yeah, you know, those things that were up there were flares. You know, a flare drop from a visiting A-10 squadron, and then this guy's trainer dies, you know, 5 weeks later, who was also an A-10 pilot, Emilio Svoboda. So, you know, there's a big huge can of worms that's within the Phoenix Lights that still has yet to come to light, and hopefully someday it will. I tried to document a lot of it. Francis Bowen has tried to document a lot of it. Obviously, to some degree, Governor Symington coming forward, you know. Yeah. You know, there's just, the events happened. The only question is, was it extraterrestrial or human? And if it was human, what was the purpose of it, you know?
Well, considering the numbers behind about this, especially with the number 13, I think there's either two choices with this. Now, of course, so one of them being, of course, human with the Masonic numbers and whatnot, but also if you look deep in the ancient history of the Masons and where they get a lot of their knowledge from, perhaps even Anunnaki may be a choice also considering the fact that their ship, that huge wedge-shaped ship also fits the description, ancient description of, you know, the ship of the gods, so to say.
Where are you getting that from? Just out of curiosity, I mean, do you have any specific references?
Well, I've read a lot about Zechariah Sitchin. I've read some Zechariah Sitchin. I've read also other, you know, like ancient documents, Vedas and whatnot, talking about the ancient... Ancient flying birds and whatnot, that or like the gods flying with wings and whatnot. I think a lot of it stems from that. And also
the chevron, the chevron configuration that we see on every soldier's, you know, military insignia. The word chevron, the word, you know, where did the Australian Aboriginal people come up with the idea of a boomerang that would come back to you?
Yeah, really. Kevin, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Have a good night, guys.
All right. All right, folks, the telephone number is 602-539-9580. Or if you need to call me toll-free, you can do so at 1-888-223-4599. And if you have a question or a comment for Bill Warrick, some of you listening to this show have seen things that are very similar to what Bill is describing here tonight. Now, you may be afraid to talk to your friends about it. It may be something where you feel a little timid for, you know, you wouldn't discuss it at work, you don't discuss it in the family. But, you know, when you call here, I ask you for your first name and where you're calling from. You don't have to tell us, and please don't tell us, your family name. And when you tell us where you're calling from, you can, you know, be very general about it. I'm calling from Australia. I'm calling from Germany. Or, you know, I'm calling from Texas. You know, people can't track you down. And you can tell us what you have seen. And believe me, there are far more folks who have seen something than there are folks who haven't. They just don't talk about it. And let's get into that a little bit, Bill. Do you notice any change in that sort of an environment, that sort of atmosphere where people are afraid to talk? Is there any change in that right now?
Yeah, I think definitely over the past 10 years, really kind of beginning with the Phoenix incident and the Norfolk incident, which is what occurred to me. I call it the Phoenix Lights. I don't call it the Phoenix Lights. I call it the Phoenix Incident because the Phoenix Lights to me is, you know, the government disinformation program and the flare drop and all that. And the Phoenix Incidents to me are the 830 stuff that you and I know both know about, you know, which is the 830-ish, you know, real boomerang-shaped sightings. So I have had, you know, back in, you know, really not too, a year or two after that event, I would, you know, sort of tell either strangers, because I wasn't worried about, you know, they didn't know me, or close friends about what had happened after I had, you know, gone to know them for a little while. And, you know, the reaction was generally the same. It was kind of put off, you know, cool, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But then if you were in a group of people in either situation, but then if you got either one of them alone, a stranger or a close friend, they would pull me aside and say, hey, man, you know, what really happened? You know, what's going on? You know, like what happened? Mm-hmm. And that has changed. So I would say that people are definitely a lot more open to it, to the whole idea, you know, without question. And I think that's just part of our whole general evolution. You know, we're advancing at such a rapid rate. Our, you know, literal evolution of information and everything is just, I mean, my kids have access and know so much more than I ever did. You know, they're reading three grades lower than I read, and I was in the Gifted and Talented program, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And my kids aren't particularly gifted and talented, or they're not in that program like I was. But still, the level, I think, of advancement is just really, it's going so quickly. It's like the things that used to take, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 years, even in the economy, you know what I'm saying? They go from boom to bust to boom to bust to, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that I think people are a lot more open to it. I think they realize that that there may be a much bigger picture to this than we can really even begin to comprehend, or that we are just beginning to comprehend.
Let's go to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, my name is James. I'm calling from Monticello, New York, about 20 minutes outside of Pine Bush. I've called a few times before.
Okay, James, let me get you to speak directly into your telephone because you're way back there for us.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I had an experience back in 2003 where a couple of friends of mine were traveling to the traveling to Middletown, New York, traveling past Pine Bush, and I happened to spot a bright white light out of the driver's side of my car So I pulled off of the highway and found a wooded area. And the bright, we parked and found an area where we could see the light straight on. The light started coming towards my car, and my friends got nervous. We took off, and the light paced my car all the way to Middletown, which was about 7 miles away, and then it disappeared.
When you say light, do you mean like an orb?
No, it was a, I'd say this light, the size of this light was about like 20 feet in length. It was just a bright white ball.
Okay, so it was round shaped?
Yes.
You know, that actually, that happened to a guy, that happened to a police officer in 1976, actually hit his car, ran him off the road, and the guy like, I believe he retired not too shortly after that.
Are you talking about the incident where the orb hit the police car and it caused damage to it?
Exactly. I think it was actually up there in your part of the woods in New Jersey or something like that.
Yeah, I think it was.
Did you guys have any other odd things happen?
Honestly, myself, I've seen total about 19 different UFO types around Sullivan County.
Well, Pine Bush Gap, supposedly, there's booking institutions over there, so you've got, they're doing anti-gravity research, supposedly. And also, there are supposedly some very sacred sites over there, which could be used. I think Pine Gap, isn't that where the big Philip and Brogner wrote about the Hudson? Is that the Hudson Valley, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, back in 1985, Philip and Brogner wrote a book about that called Night Siege, I believe, which you haven't already read. You might want to pick it up and maybe even try and get in touch with him. And he did a lot of research about that stuff. And the orbs appear to be attached or part of or some sort of probe, you know, unmanned or who knows, they could be manned, probes that are sent out by the boomerangs or the other larger aircraft. So if you see an orb around, chances are that there's probably a larger aircraft somewhere. You know, you may never see it, but they appear to be, jettisoned the same way that we have an aircraft carrier. You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So,
well, if there was a larger craft around, I'm glad I didn't see it because my friends were freaking out already.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. Everybody wants to be a tough guy. I grew up in one of the toughest neighborhoods in Southie, and mobsters in the whole nine yards, and I'll tell you what, that was the most awe-inspiring thing I've ever experienced, and, well, that's a cool story, man.
Hey, thanks for the call. Very interesting.
You guys have a good night.
All right, thank you. The telephone number, folks, is 602-539-9580, or if you need to call me toll-free, you can do so at 888-223-4599. We got time. If you call right now, we got time before break to get a real short call in. Lots of folks around the country are seeing things they cannot explain in the sky. And none of the cover stories that are being put out work anymore. They just, they're just not even plausible. They just don't work. People don't buy it. They know what they saw. And if someone tells them that what they saw was a weather balloon, a flare, swamp gas, or Chinese wedding candle, they just don't buy that. They know what they saw. They may not be able to tell you what it is, but they can tell you it's none of those things.
What it wasn't. Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And I, one of the changes that I am seeing is the public is beginning to bow up on this. Do you know that term?
It's sort of reaching a mass momentum, combined with the internet. Because you remember back in 97 when all this happened, the internet was really just still in its infancy.
Unfortunately, the break has caught us. You're right. And the internet was in its infancy. We'll be back right after this. We'll pick up right there, and the telephone line is open for you. Do you know where your phone is? We are back, and we're talking with Bill Warrick. Bill, we had to cut you off in mid-sentence because the break took over. If you want to continue, go ahead.
I can't remember what we were talking about.
Well, that's okay. We'll just pick up here and move forward. One of the things that I had said was that I noticed that, you know, there's a change in public attitude. The public is bowing up, and it's just like, they come out and say, well, okay, we didn't have any jets. We didn't have anything in the air in Stephenville. Then they come back and say, oh, yeah, we had a squadron that was on exercises, and we just forgot about them. And the people just look at that and say, yeah, right.
Yeah, I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off. You can always count on someone in the chain of command in the military not to get the message in time. You know what I'm saying? So, it's becoming increasingly difficult for them to cover up these events that seem to be occurring with absolutely more frequency and absolutely more intensity. What's interesting is that the intensity, the hot spots, seem to travel all around the world. And, you know, skeptics would say, oh, well, that's because, it's a mass hysteria type of thing. And it's absolutely not true. I mean, you've got mayors of politicians all in France and Britain, you know, people of upstanding nature. I met Paul Hellyer briefly at one of the X conferences. It was the former basic equivalent of the Secretary of Defense for Canada. You know, we're something's going on, and we're not being told what's going on, and it's a little bit scary. And at some point, something's got to give. And I think the real situation that we have to think about, kind of discussed this briefly with some other people, Edgar Mitchell and some other very important people. How this whole thing is going to unravel. Is it going to unravel with the sort of, you know, circus atmosphere of fear and like this whole, you know, recent outbreak of the swine flu, H1VN2, whatever it is? Or will it be a much more, you know, sort of open, slow diffusion, hopefully, you know, gulp it in little gulps type thing? And it seems to be regressing towards the latter, hopefully. And I think that's a good thing. So,
well, yeah, I don't. Well, look, here's the deal. The secrecy was installed by an executive order signed by Truman.
Mm-hmm.
An executive order signed by any president can be rescinded by any president. It's not a lifetime sentence. It's not, you know, it doesn't have to stand for the entire life of the republic. Any president can sign a new executive order canceling a previous executive order. And all these people who are sworn to secrecy and they've got to keep their mouth shut, and, you know, any president that wants the story out can issue the executive order that cancels Truman's order. And it can happen,
you know,
with a flick of a wrist.
If Obama can't tackle the marijuana question, I mean, he's not going to touch the UFO question with a 10-foot pole, it looks like, which is sad. But again, you know, it's also very difficult to undo, you know, 50, 60 odd years of the military-industrial complex having, you know, secret black budget accounts that don't exist, and, you know, secret bank accounts that don't exist, and secret countries that don't exist, and, you know, something has the black budget from 1947-ish on has been something around $1 trillion a year, adjusted for inflation and gross national product and all that. And the former comptroller of the United States just reported just 6 months ago, wrote a book about it, that our actual debt is like $55 trillion, which is about $1 trillion a year since 1947. It's 55 years or so, $55 trillion. So, you know, the real reason why we're in the position that we're in now is because we took this tract back in 1947 to reverse engineer and develop all these technologies that were recovered from whatever source, could have been recovered from the Germans. It might not be ET technology. It might be German technology. We don't, you know, who knows, whatever. Maybe they were working with the ETs.
Could
but
be.
This technology was definitely far in advance of Einstein's theory of relativity, which was formulated in 1905 to give you some idea of the antiquity of where the highest science has gone since then. Right? You know?
Yeah.
Grand Unified Theory, the whole nine yards.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I saw definitely displayed to me that the Grand Unified Theory, or whatever theory explains what I saw, Einstein, it went way beyond Einstein's theory of relativity. And so Einstein's theory of relativity and gravity, you know what I'm saying? That's not, it's no longer a barrier.
Yeah, it's kind of getting obsolete. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hi. This is Michael from Monticello. My brother James just called in a little while ago.
All right, Michael, speak directly into your telephone, please. We can barely hear you.
Yes, hi. My brother James just called in a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was just calling to verify and tell you that the story he told you about the UFO, I mean the light chasing us,
mm-hmm.
is true. And me, my cousin, and one of my good friends were freaked out in the back seat of the car.
Did you guys experience any lost time?
Not that I know of. As soon as we seen the light coming towards us, we hopped in the car and got out of there.
And now it followed you for how many miles?
7 miles.
And whenever you got into town, then where did the light go?
Disappeared. I couldn't see it anymore.
What do you think it was?
I don't know. Like, as soon as I seen it make start coming towards us, like, the hair on my neck started to stand up. I got a real uneasy feeling, and I just wanted to get out of the area.
Mm-hmm.
That's a general description of what you would feel if the object was emitting, you know, electromagnetic radiation, you know. It could make you feel uneasy. You know, there are some sacred sites that you can go to in that area that they'll make you feel the same way if you go into some of the chambers there, supposedly. I haven't experienced it myself. There is one chamber that I know of in New England that's just like that, that also is kind of associated with UFOs. But, yeah, dude, I totally believe you. Don't get me wrong, man. I mean, I've seen orbs. You can go to the website, UFOWitness.com. I've got a picture of an orb that we caught over floating over my house, a couple of pictures, actually.
Tell us that web address again. Slow it down. Cripple that and run it past us again.
I know. That's that Boston coming out of me, you know. It's www.UFOEyewitness.com, and eyewitness is spelled EyeWitnesses.com with UFO at the beginning of it, so UFOEyewitness.com. And I've got a couple of exclusive videos up there, actually, that are on YouTube, but not as good a quality, and you can check out some of that stuff on there. And I totally hear you. The orbs have been, I think probably the two things that have increased the most in terms of sightings and everything else are definitely the orbs and the boomerangs, because it used to be like flying saucers and stuff like that, but now it's definitely triangles, boomerangs, and orbs, which is interesting.
And I also have a question. Do you think that maybe some of the UFOs flying around are actually some of the Nazis that got away after World War II?
Well, here's the thing. You talk about Foo Fighters, and yeah, absolutely. These orbs have been, you know, reported by, they were called Foo Fighters in World War II, and, you know, supposedly they're, you know, glass, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing. I can give you descriptions and show you, you know, descriptions of the same things in medieval paintings going back, you know, 400, 500, 600, 700, 800 years. So, you know, the whole idea of the whole orb, that actually goes back to ancient mythology. If you just look up orb in mythology and medieval paintings, your eyes will open up to a little bit of something that was hidden, that sort of like Da Vinci Code for people who know what's going on, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay, Michael, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Hope you'll call us again. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580. Now, if you can make that call without it costing you long distance, please use that number. If you have to pay long distance to call that number, don't do it. Call our toll-free number, which is 1-888-223-4599. Again, 1-888-223-4599. Bill, have you done any investigation or research into the extraterrestrials themselves?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you about one particular type that we've heard about. We've heard about some people call them reptilians, some people call them reptoids. Have you done any research into those?
You know, the only concrete, or what I would actually consider concrete, so other people may not consider it concrete, but the only stories that I've heard that kind of go back, actually there are a lot of stories that you could go back to, you know, the old Sumerian depictions of their gods, and et cetera, et cetera. But there's a more closer one, which is the Navajo tradition of the skinwalkers, which are supposedly these people that take on the form of humans but are actually, you know, like lizard people that, you know, can transform into lizards and stuff like that. You know, we have no idea what could be done with the human genome, let alone the manipulation of the human genome into, you know, multiple strands of DNA and stuff like that. I mean, if they can grow human hairs on the backs of mice today, I mean, God knows what they can do in the future. And so that's about all that I know about it. And I have spoken to some people, you know, in the Navajo community, and one person in particular confided in me. He was, like, shocked that I even knew what that was. And he's like, he was actually really kind of afraid after I had mentioned it. He kind of clammed up. So is it possible? Absolutely. Do I have any direct evidence of it? No. It's the grays. I think I know a little bit more about the grays than I do about the reptilians. But I mean, it seems to be definitely, and anything's possible. You know, we live in a universe of possibilities. So,
mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about the grays for a moment. Now, I have heard that the grays are sort of pre-programmed biological clones, and that you know, they serve the other races of ETs. What do you think about that notion?
I think that the plant form of a large-headed humanoid with multi-digit fingers, you know, a large cranium and large eyes, could be viewed in three different ways. And we could actually be seeing three different things. And one could be an interdimensional or time travel situation where these people, these so-called grays, could be humans from the future, right?
All right.
Have somehow figured out how to time travel or coming back and somehow trying to interact with us and warn us of things that, you know, we're screwing up or something like that, right?
Okay. And look, we're just 20 seconds away from break. Why don't we hold all of this until we come back from break, and we'll dive in right there.
No sweat. I'm writing it down.
Okay. All right, folks. When we come back from break, we'll hear more from Bill Warrick. We'll have time probably for one or two calls if you can find your phone. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Bill Warrick. Bill, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence again.
Yep.
Let's jump in right there. We were talking about the grays.
Yeah, three categories of the grays that I kind of see them as breaking down into, which could all be the same. They're not exclusive of each other. You know, all three of these things could be happening at the same time, and one is that these beings that are described as grays could be humans from the future doing some type of time travel. The second one, which seems to be the most prevalent one, and this is the one that, you know, Edgar Mitchell and other people who, you know, probably know a lot more about it than I do, certainly know a lot about more than I do, have confided that, you know, these are probably cetacean-based life forms, which are basically
dolphins that came out of the sea. So, and evolved into a humanoid, back on land into a humanoid form, possibly from Mars. And so that's what some of these greys may be. And that there may be some type of, they did some kind of cloning experiments, and which continues to this day, apparently, supposedly, which I think there may be a lot of evidence for, you taking into account cattle mutilations and stuff like that. We share the same DNA, but they're just much more advanced than us. And certainly the stun effect, one of the things that's been described by many contactees, is the ability for these greys to, you know, sort of look at them and look at them through the eyes, and they just kind of go into this like trance-like state or pass out or whatever. And that same effect is actually developed by cetaceans, which are dolphins. You know, the sonar is incredible. They can actually, what they see when they hit with their sonar in the water is like an X-ray. And they can actually kill fish from a distance of, I don't know what it is, 5, 10, 15 feet away, just by focusing their, you know, electromagnetic energy off the back of their skull. So the grays certainly fit the profile of a cetacean, you know, humanoid form, you know, basically a creature which, you know, evolved onto land, then went to the water, which was where the dolphins are now, and then evolved back onto the land, which may have happened during the evaporation and the loss of the oceans around Mars.
Wow. Wow.
They said back 100 years ago that they came, you know, there were Martians invading the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they really were. We just covered it up. And look at everything that H.G. Wells talked about, you know, and wrote about, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years before they became real. Maybe they really were exposed to something. They covered it up for a while so people could, you know, so they could catch up with it, just like we did in 1947, and now we're caught up with it.
All right, well, now that brings up the whole topic of how much of the science fiction stuff that we've seen do you think is reality?
Oh, reality is way beyond anything that they've come up with in science fiction yet. I've yet to see a science fiction movie, except for perhaps a few parts in Star Wars that really compare to what seems to be available out there, which is just, you know. Until you see something that you can't explain, that you just know is just like, oh my God, what is that? And then you see it again and again and again and again and again over and over again and realize it wasn't just one little fluke. And then you hear it all day long, Kevin. You know,
mm-hmm.
People from all over the world making these same reports. It's not all poppycock, you know, it's not just people seeing mistaken things. I mean, those two gentlemen seemed generally perturbed by the event that occurred with that orb, you know?
Oh, yeah. You could hear the genuineness of the emotion in their voices.
Absolutely.
And that's not unusual. People that have had an experience like that know that it's real. And, you know, that was not a Chinese wedding candle that followed them for 7 miles. Nor was it a flare.
And it's a couple of guys, you know, who are not going to get as freaked out as, or, you know, supposedly not as freaked out. But, I mean, you know, I hear you. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it happens all the time, and that's the funny thing about it. You know, we only hear maybe 1 out of 10 at best, and probably more like 1 out of 20 or 30 or 50. Well, it's more like 1 out of 10 now. It used to be 1 out of 100, 1 out of 1,000. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, look at the Phoenix Lights case. I mean, the initial people that came forward out of the 700 people that definitely called Francis Bowen and all, you know, basically all said they saw a boomerang, or reported something, you know, a solid object type thing, reporting the same reports over and over again. You only heard of like Tim Lay and maybe 3 or 4 other people at the most. Even to this day, you only maybe know two or three names, most people, if anybody, that knows anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact there was, you know, probably at least like Francis Bowe would testify to several people.
Did you know that there was an attempt on her life at that time?
She's been shot at a couple of times. I know.
Yeah. Yeah, and
there's all kinds of things that she's been going through, and it's amazing that, you know, I don't know, man. It's just the harassment. But to her credit, you know, she's
She's tough.
You know, she told him where to stick it. Hell yeah.
Yeah, she's tough. Well, listen, before we run out of time, I want to do a couple of things very quickly. Tell us again, slowly, your web address. Normally, let me tell you, William, normally your picture would be linked to your web address. Your picture on my site, they could click it and it would take you to your website. Right now, that page is not available to anyone. It will become available later tonight as we get things corrected. But I don't want them to have to wait. So tell us your web address.
Again, it's www.ufoeyewitness.com. UFO eyewitness, all one word, .com.
Okay. Now, where can they get your books?
Actually, we are going to probably load them up and have them available online as an e-book. Within the next 2 months, because we had a deal fall through in the fall due to the whole financial calamity with the publisher, so we're probably just gonna self publish and save some trees, man. Set the example for my son.
Yeah. Okay. So that web address would be the place they would need to go, but it's going to be in a couple of weeks, or I mean, a couple of months before it's available.
It'll probably be a couple of months, yeah. I'm shooting for the fall to get everything uploaded on the web, make sure it's not going to crash, you know, that kind of thing. And we'll definitely be doing more interviews, and the table of contents, of course, will be available to you. And we can definitely probably do a show on each book for sure.
Outstanding. All right. Now, are you speaking in any upcoming conferences that we need to know about?
No. Kind of on a little bit of a sabbatical this spring. I was, doing the whole thing there for a couple of years, and kind of realized I needed to spend some more time with the kids and the family. And so I've kind of taken a step back from that and just going to try and focus on the books here over the summertime and just take it from there.
All right. One final question. Do you have any new books in the works?
No. I'm really just want to focus on publishing the four that I've already written.
Outstanding.
Or take on another one.
Bill, thanks for being with us. I want you to stay on the line with me for just a moment. I want to talk with you for just a moment after the show. But I want to thank you for being with us. It's always interesting when you're here.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. Definitely. And all to the listeners of the Kevin Smith Show, you know, it's so important that you help support the show and keep on listening, because you're really not going to get this kind of information in very many places, and this is one of them. So definitely, save this page, bookmark it, and, definitely come back and listen, because this is where it's at.
All right, Bill. Thank you. Just stay on the line with me for a moment. All right, folks, tomorrow evening my guest is going to be Dean Warsing. And some of you already know Dean. Let me tell you, it's going to be well worth it again tomorrow. Always is. So you want to be sure you tune in and catch that show tomorrow. Dean is going to be speaking at the UFO Skywatch Conference up in Sedona, Arizona. I also will be speaking there. And we will also have David Sarita and Jose Escamilla will be there. Lots of people, and it's the Ed Grimsley UFO Skywatch Conference. You want to go over to UFOSkywatch.com and make your reservations, get your tickets. All right, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.